It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Well, hello, and welcome to my home. This video is for you. Well, hello, welcome to my living room. Do you like this gown?
Well, hello, I'd like you to meet my dog, Charles.
Good morning. Meet my cat, Snow. I'm starving.
I swept my hair over to the side.
That was exhausting. As you can see from my closets, I'm very much into style and fashion.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. There was another day in May. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me is the bearded one, my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Mayo!
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 And last but not least, over yonder, super producer, J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Tass and our guy, Jerome, headed to Denver today to cover the NBA Finals. Tass will be there for games 1 and 2, then TK heads out down to Miami, pack your Speedos to games 3 and 4.
Honestly, great reminder. I will take my Speedo.
Awesome. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Go get your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. We got a new Miami Heat coffee mug up in the store. Again, nodunks.com. And because we're feeling frisky, we're taking 23% off of Breaking Tee's entire Miami basketball collection. All of their Miami Heat-inspired shirts and sweatshirts are 23% off. You got to use the promo code ND23. Did it for Denver? We've done it for Miami now. I think you're going to have about 24 hours to take advantage of that. So ND23 for 23% off the entire Miami basketball collection over at BreakingTee.com. All right, fun show here. A lot to talk about. We're going to get into the Celtics and their offseason questions. We got to talk a little bit about Bob Myers leaving the Warriors. You've got a very, very, very strange tweet of the night. As soon as I saw it last night, I'm like, yep, Trey's picking that one. So we'll get to that. But it took a little longer than anticipated. But after the Miami Heat had that commanding win in Game 7 versus the Celtics in the East Finals, we got the 2023 NBA Finals matchup. It's set. It's the Heat and the Denver Nuggets tipping off this Thursday night with the first two games at Ball Arena. So let's break it all down. Few questions. We'll get into X factors. Obviously make our predictions. But my first question to you, TK, is just what's your favorite storyline heading into this Miami Heat versus Denver Nuggets Finals?
Well, I'm just hoping that the Nuggets are awake, man. They haven't played in forever. Like, is Nikola Jokic literally hibernating right now? They're like, hey, wake up, man. We got media day today. We actually have something we need to do.
Right. It's been
Rest
a while.
Rest versus Rust. That's going to be a storyline. Oh, you're going to hear a lot about that one. But for me, my favorite storyline, no doubt, somebody's getting a big-time ring for their legacy in this NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. The stars from both teams, no rings in Nikola Jokic and Jimmy Butler. Jokic is trying to cap off a monster three-year run, two-time MVP, followed by a one seed in the Western Conference, followed by a title. Who knows if he would win finals MVP, but there's a great likelihood if the Nuggets go on to win that it's going to be Jokic as the guy. That's basically the run that got Giannis into the top 75 players of all time on the NBA list. I mean, he had a Defensive Player of the Year award as well, but it was interesting when Jokic was left off that list as a two-time MVP. He could be getting a ring the season after. Looking like a worthy inclusion when they get to NBA 100 24 years from now. On the flip side, I kind of think Jimmy Butler is going for a Hall of Fame ring. He has had a major image overhaul since leaving the Bulls. Left on poor terms there, left on poor terms from the Timberwolves, left on poor terms from the Sixers. And people are saying, is Jimmy Butler worth it? Jimmy Butler is completely worth it because he is Heat culture embodied.
Yep.
People basically just realized Jimmy was right about the other organizations and also right about the Heat. It's a perfect match, him and Miami. He's probably right now like on the borderline of being a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah.
Six-time All-Star. I think he's five-time All-NBA, five-time All-Defense. He's got a lot of regular season accomplishments. Obviously been to the finals one time, but a ring really, really puts him over the top, especially considering they would be a play-in team who goes on to win the championship. When you talk about rings that matter the most, that's going to be pretty high up on the list.
Yes.
Like, it's going to be up there. I don't know if it's necessarily Dirk Nowitzki-esque, since he stayed so long with his team, had the 8-1 upset, and then came back and won the title a few seasons later. But it's at least up there with, like, the Golden State Warriors suddenly becoming the best team in the league and going to win the championship in 2015 with Steph Curry. So I think that would be a huge narrative ring for Butler. And it's either going to be Butler or Jokic getting a ring after this. And that's pretty special.
That is pretty cool. And there is something extra special about that chase for that first championship.
Totally.
With these players, and then in Denver's case, as a franchise trying to get their first one. So that is cool. I would add to that, selfishly, I can't lose in this NBA Finals. Either Jamal Murray, Kitchener's finest, good old Canadian boy, wins a ring, or Kyle Lowry, the Groat, wins a second ring with the Miami Heat, obviously winning one with the Raptors in 2019. So I'm pumped by that. Just another weird, random, fun storyline. As a player, assistant coach, coach, and executive, Pat Riley is in his 19th NBA Finals. 19 times in some aspect, either as a player, coach, or executive, he's been there. 19 out of how many? 76?
Yeah.
It's incredible percentage.
That's a high percentage.
He's there every 2.5 years.
Phil Jackson, I guess, is probably in the teens, and then all the Celtics guys from the 1960s.
Right.
That's got to be about it.
Yeah, it's wild. And then my other favorite storyline, and you know you're going to be hearing this all week long, and you've already heard it. It's like some people going, "Yeah, what a gross finals. Miami versus Denver, especially an 8 seed. Oh, Denver Nuggets. No one watches them." You know, we're getting this blowback from people going, "Ugh, wish it was the Lakers Celtics for the 13th time in the NBA Finals. Wish we could see the old black and white montages from ABC with those two dynasties going at it. The race for 18 banners. Yeah, that would have been cool in the ratings and blah, blah, blah." Who gives a shit? You said it. It's either this Cinderella Heat as the 8 seed pulling this off with Jimmy Butler leading the way, or it's Jokic doing the Giannis narrative where you win a bunch of MVPs, everybody goes, "Yeah, well, okay, cool. Do it in the playoffs. Win a ring." And he could do that. So this is going to be awesome. Now, I think the concern is this going to be a blowout? Or is this going to be a competitive series? Because there's a lot of people out there leaning towards the Denver Nuggets in a potential sweep in maybe 5 games. You're seeing a lot of that. But can the Heat obviously make this a competitive finals? If not, once again, pull off the upset. They already did it against Milwaukee. They obviously did it against Boston in that last round. Can they do it for a third time?
The Nuggets haven't lost a game since May 7th.
Okay, yeah.
That's
They've
a
only
long
lost
time,
three
man.
Games. They're 12-3.
They've lost 3 times. One was a furious comeback. They were up 3-0. Furious comeback. I think they scored like the last 12 or 13 points or whatever against the Timberwolves in round one. Jokic went to the line down 1, 2 free throws, only made 1. They could have easily swept that series. The 2 losses against the Suns were Devin Booker going to the next level and Kevin Durant showing up as well. They were both scoring like 80 points combined or something in both of those losses. Then obviously they smoked the Lakers in a competitive 4-game sweep, which was nonetheless still a sweep. But that's the thing. It's like the Heat are only beating the best teams in the league right now. They've had 1 easy series against the Knicks. Basically, everybody else has been somebody you consider a championship contender coming into the season. I don't remember where we had the Heat on our preseason tiers list. Probably like Final Four hopefuls would be my guess, since they did go to the conference finals last season. But that's what makes it so interesting. It's like, yeah, the Nuggets should probably roll in this series. They've been the best team in the playoffs. They've got the best player going. But we've seen the Heat go up against the best teams and just knock them off one right after another.
Yeah. No, they want to be in this position.
Yeah.
If anything, the Miami Heat do with Spo and Jimmy and the whole Heat culture is like, yeah, we're the underdogs. Again, surprise, surprise. Okay, we'll shut you up again. We'll see if they can do it. All right, well, let's get to one thing to watch for in this series. What do you got circled?
Well, we didn't get to touch on this on storyline, but I would like to see Nikola Jokic and Nikola Jovic on the floor
sure.
at the same point. Probably won't happen, though, because Jokic tends to start games and Jokic tends to finish blowouts.
Yeah, right.
If you know what I'm saying.
Right.
But
very unlikely.
Very unlikely, but I got a feeling they'll do it.
You think Spo and Malone, just for the moment, at one point, we'll put them both out there?
Yeah, just for fun. Right. There will be one game where it's not competitive, and it'll just overlap perfectly. So okay. I'd love to see that. One thing to watch for, though, definitely the Heat zone. Nobody plays more zone. Nobody is better at playing the zone than Miami. But the Nuggets have Nikola Jokic. They've got some great shooters, and they've got great cutters. KCP is a great off-ball cutter. Aaron Gordon, one of the best. So I think Miami will probably still play zone. Whoa. Occasionally, because they have to. Like, they're going to want to get Duncan Robinson on the court, and that's a way to get Duncan Robinson on the court. They probably just won't be able to stick with it for long stretches like they did against the Celtics, because eventually Denver will crack the case. You know, that's the thing. It's going to have to just be a monkey wrench, I do believe, for the Heat. If the Nuggets are rolling, throw it out for a couple of possessions. They got to stop and think at least a little. Maybe you get one stop out of three possessions, and that matters. But going further, it's how do the Heat guard Jokic? The Heat play one big guy.
Who's not even that big?
Bam is 6'9".
I know.
He's a speedy big, more so than a girthy big, like Jokic is. So I wonder, like, is Kevin Love back in this series? Is he playing a little bit since a new one, at least early? Maybe. Cody Zeller maybe back? Omer Yurtseven? Am I crazy for even saying that name during a preview, Skeets? I thought it was interesting that he was always the first deep bench guy playing for Miami. They're going to need some big guys to step up in this series outside of Bam. Bam cannot get in foul trouble.
No.
And I also wonder if we're going to see kind of like a modified little Rover thing going on with Miami, where Bam guards Jokic one-on-one, takes the bumps, physical with him, and then Jimmy Butler maybe guards Aaron Gordon, and he's the Rover. Trying to just make plays, maybe dig down deep and get a steal, protect the rim, something like that. Similar to what Anthony Davis did. Of course, Anthony Davis is a 7-footer who's a great rim protector. Jimmy's a different player, but it's going to be interesting to see what the Heat do with Jokic, because they're not going to stop him. But Spoelstra's going to have some ideas to at least make him have to think about what's going on.
Well, then the counter to that is, you're not going to stop him. So do you even allow him to try and shoot and score more? In the games they lost in these playoffs, those were the monster Jokic games. Those were the huge numbers. And we've always said it. It's like, are you better off just letting Jokic shoot a lot, score a ton, and try and take away everything else? And that's why Jimmy Butler and Jamal Murray, what a player. Jamal Murray is important here because, like, if that's the game plan, and I don't think it's crazy. I really don't. Because, again, we've seen some success. Jokic doesn't want to play that way. He'd rather, it's just in him to be a playmaker like that. But maybe it's just like, okay, man, you operate. We're gonna maybe do some zone defense. You're going to be in the middle. You want to pick it apart, but we want you to shoot those floaters, those little free throw line jumpers, whatever, go inside on Bam. Jamal Murray is important to the Heat's success to winning this. They have to shut him down, because it can't be both, If Jokic is going for 45s and whatever, and you're trying to take away everybody else, then Murray can't be averaging 28 points per game, or even more like he did in the Western Conference Finals. He's cruising right now. I mean, he's averaging, like I said, 28 points per game in the postseason, 48, 40, and 92 shooting splits. He was even better in the West Finals. He was a problem with a capital P for the Lakers. And if the Heat cannot prevent him from sort of getting unlocked, unleashed, then they're in a lot of trouble here, I think. But can Jimmy, can the team defense slow Murray? That I think that is the real key for them, Miami Heat pulling off an upset. Take Murray down a notch or two. Let Jokic get his. He's going to get his anyway.
Yeah.
And try and just contain him. And easier said than done.
Move. Yeah. You can't take away everything, but you got to pick what you're going to give up. And maybe giving up twos to Jokic is the move there. And then you try and bomb away from three, kind of like how the Heat beat the Celtics. You know, they held the Celtics to 20% shooting in games 6 and 7 from the 3-point line. So we know they can take away the perimeter game from some teams. That being said, Denver is much better at moving the ball to get good shots rather than taking the first three that's available. But I think it would be smart for Miami to make Jokic into a scorer, just because then they can maybe flip the math. The Heat have been shooting so well in the playoffs, that's like, it probably is going to continue. They will have some poor shooting games, but at this point, I'm betting on them continuing to shoot. It's only another 7 games they got to do it. So flipping the math could be smart.
Schumann with the stat breakdown for the Nuggets. The Nuggets have scored 119.7 points per 100 possessions over their last 15 playoff games. That's the most efficient offense a team has had through 3 rounds of the playoffs in the last 6 years. You got to go back to LeBron's Cavaliers, who went nuts through the first three rounds in 2017, losing just one game, those LeBron Cavs, to the Pacers, Raptors, and Celtics. So that's the level this Nuggets offense is clicking at here, led by Jokic, obviously Jamal in the secondary role, and then all these shooters.
They are a Warriors-esque offense, honestly, the way they play. I would say the Warriors of Curry, Thompson, and Draymond. Not necessarily with the Kevin Durant thrown in. That is another level, but it's honestly another level for Denver as well, because it's like, what if you took Draymond Green, who is a great decision maker, great playmaker, and he's also a 65% shooter from anywhere on the court. That's what the Nuggets have when they're running their almost three-man game when Jokic gets the ball at the mid-post. Michael Porter Jr. is flying one way. Jamal Murray's flying the other way. That's like 40% three-point shooters.
Yeah.
Who are you guarding there? That's why Denver is impossible to stop.
All right, Miami Heat X-Factor. Is there a player or two that you're...
Everybody on the Heat is an X-Factor.
So Gabe, Caleb, right? Duncan, those guys got to continue to bomb
Gabe
away.
Vincent has won a game in the playoffs. Duncan Robinson has basically won a game in the playoffs. Yeah. Caleb Martin almost won a series in the playoffs. Nobody would pick those as anything else than X-Factors, but going forward, you kind of got to lock them in as role players you're counting on, and I assume all of the Heat role guys will show up at some point in this series, likely when they get back home. Game one is going to be tough for Miami. Coming off a seven-game series, I think game one in Denver is basically impossible to win in the first place. We've seen like blowouts, I think, in every game one they've had so far this season, where they just like look too fast, too athletic. They're getting up threes. It's a completely different beast. So I think that one's going to be tough. But two bigger X factors to me, Tyler Hero is an X factor from a does he play standpoint. Is it good if he plays? Is he good? He hasn't played in 2 months.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a while since Tyler Hero has been on the court. I still think you would rather have him. You probably don't start him right now, but the Heat have such limited numbers in the first place that they're going to want another player who can put the ball on the floor and score, especially like we've seen how fragile this Heat rotation is right now, where Gabe Vincent sprained his own ankle, had to come back after missing a game, and he was a huge addition to have. So more bodies would be great for Miami. I also think Bam Adebayo's offense is a huge X factor. He's going to compete defensively. We know Jokic is probably going to win that matchup. But we need some sort of production from Bam on the offensive end. He's got to push in transition. He's got to make Jokic chase him up and down the court every single time. One of the underrated things of Nikola Jokic, the guy never gets tired.
Yeah.
He is in incredible shape right now, even though he looks like he's in the same shape right now. But just keep running him. If Bam can somehow get Jokic into a little bit of foul trouble, that's huge for Miami. So I think Bam has to be a factor on the offensive end.
Even if that were to happen, Bam gets a couple quick fouls on Jokic. We've seen Jokic play with foul trouble, too, in this postseason. He's so smart. His basketball IQ is off the chart. He'll decide, like, okay, I won't swipe at that one. I'll give up the 2 points because it's more important I play. But Bam is right. His best defense in this series is going to be his offense. Can he, like, just put some points up for one thing? We talked about him missing bunnies in that Celtics series. He just had zero touch around the rim. When you look at the two regular season games against Denver, he missed a lot of shots, 16 of 28 shots, but he got to the free throw line a ton. 18 free throw attempts for Bam in the two regular season games against the Denver Nuggets. They're going to need that pressure and him tacking. Him obviously going to be given a little bit of that jumper around the free throw line too. Can he take it with some confidence, hit a couple, or back down, hit a little hook shot or two? And use his speed. Like, Jokic, you're right, doesn't tire. Bam is a much more athletic player in terms of going sort of lateral. Can he get around him and attack him? I don't know if I believe he will. I mean, we just saw Anthony Davis, who at times feels like a souped-up version of Bam.
Yep.
He had some monster lines, but his impact in that sweep was like, I don't know, left a little to be desired, it felt like, because he's going against a two-time MVP, a guy at the top of his game right now in Jokic. So can Bam, at least in some of these games, not equalize Jokic's numbers, but put some points up on the board, get him in foul trouble, make him run, make him tired as the game goes on, and like we said, maybe allow Jokic to score 55 to 60 points as everybody can just stay home at.
Yeah, don't wear yourself out, maybe. Maybe that's the key. Like, I think it's hard to guard Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
Both from a standpoint of he's going to score on you, and he's going to just completely wear you out because he's huge.
Yeah.
The guy's 300 pounds, and he's coming at you every play, and he's posting up all the time. He's just a load to handle. So, Bam's got to be 18 to 20 points per game this series rather than 11 or 12 like he was at the end of the Boston
series. And the size just doesn't stop in advantage for the Nuggets with Jokic, right? It's like Porter's huge. Gordon, in comparison to a lot of the Heat wing players, huge. Like, there's a lot of size there for Denver, and I think you're going to need, obviously, gang rebounding for Miami and trying to, like, shore up that and not giving up offensive rebounds, which they did at times to the Celtics, especially when Time Lord was in there and stuff like that. Long rebounds, too. They were always capitalizing on those. All right, Denver Nuggets. Who's an X factor? We know it's not Jokic. We know it's not Jamal Murray. Who else is it?
I think Denver's easier to figure out X factors because you're like, here's the players who are going to be good. They've got pretty clearly defined roles. Yeah. Whereas with the Heat, you're like, we got Jimmy and then we got whoever's going to show up.
Sure.
Somebody is going to be. But I think Aaron Gordon is the X factor for the Nuggets to me. He's going to be key on both sides of the ball. I think he gets a huge chunk of the Jimmy Butler assignment defensively. He's got the strength to take Jimmy's bumps. He's got the footwork to stick with him. Hopefully he was just watching the Celtics series. Don't go up on pump fakes. Seems to be a pretty good key, so I imagine that will be a coaching point from Michael Malone. And I also think on the offensive end, Gordon is such a good cutter and that he's going to be instrumental in breaking the zone. We'll definitely see some alley-oops from Jokic to Aaron Gordon over the top from the free throw line right to the rim or just simple backdoor cuts. But there are also going to be times, I think, when Aaron Gordon is going to be left wide open, just like he was in the Lakers series. Sometimes he shot him with confidence, knocked him down. Sometimes it was hesitation mode, and it didn't look quite as smoothly. He unlocks their bench as their small ball five. That's a fun lineup to watch when they bring in the compost crew, and they're just flying up and down. So I think he's a big-time player for Denver.
I would also just go with, because when you do the Denver Nuggets, like you said, you go through the roster, it's like they only play like seven guys, eight guys. I guess we count Jeff Green. He'll get some spot minutes. It's like, who? Who are you picking? You went through, obviously, Aaron Gordon. I guess Michael Porter Jr., we have said since the start of the playoffs, he is the ultimate X factor when it comes to winning a championship. This guy plays well. They could win this whole thing, and he's been great for a majority of this postseason. Has held up defensively, as you've talked about a ton. Really impressed you there. So I guess I'll go Bruce Brown. Can he continue to be like sort of the Nuggets version of Caleb Martin in a weird way? Like this, like we knew he was good. We loved the signing, but then he's had these moments in postseason games in this run where he like takes over for half a quarter and you know extends a lead or something like that. Obviously puts pressure on the rim. Awesome in transition. So can he continue the compost crew, Brown and Green, continue to bring it? I think we'll see Christian Brown actually a little bit more.
Because
Malone went away from him in that series against the Lakers. But I think because of his size and sort of the small amount of bench that we've talked about with Denver, I think he'll get a chance here at least to start with. And I love these coaches. They're not afraid to be like, all right, here's the idea of our rotation. Oh, you don't got it. Or this doesn't work against this team. See you later. Mm-hmm. Or like you're saying, maybe it's like, oh my God, is there a Yurt 7 sighting? Like, is that happening? Could. It could. Neither of these coaches, especially Spo coming into this, he knows he can try, like, anything goes. Because they're mad underdogs. They're
totally,
the damn 8 seed. You're going against Jokic. This offensive, you know, just juggernaut. You know he's going to try everything.
Yeah.
He'll give it a go, which will make for a lot of fun. All right, prediction. Where does TK lean? Tass, by the way, before he took off to Denver, he went Nuggets in five. So he went with that pretty popular pick of Denver doing this in five games. What about you?
Yeah, I think when we, you know, finally get the breakdowns of headshots of who everybody picked from the various outlets, it's going to be mostly on the Nuggets.
Sure.
They have to be the huge favorite here. It's an 8-1, of course, and the other two, the one has a two-time MVP. So I'm nearly like Tass. I think the Nuggets are going to win this series pretty handily, but I got a lot of faith in Jimmy Butler and a lot of faith in Eric Spoelstra to steal a couple of games. So give me Nuggets in six.
Okay.
Nuggets in six.
Game one is massive. Both of these teams, I believe they've both won game one in every single series. Obviously Denver, and I believe the Heat did that as well. So never really like trailing in a series because they go and get game one. So that's big.
Yep.
It's this whole, you know, rust versus rest thing, you know. Is Denver going to blow them out of the water here on Thursday night? Because the Heat are coming off a seven-game series, and they flew right there, and they've played a lot more, you know, minutes and playoff games over at least the last couple weeks than Denver has. Or is it in their favor because Denver hasn't played? And it's tough to keep, like, that finals playoff sort of mentality going when you're not, when you're just sitting around for 10 days. You're just taking care of your horses.
Just tending to the stables.
You know, that's calming, I would imagine. So that's big. That game one is massive, I think, for how the rest of this series goes. Kevin Pelton broke it down, too. Teams with both home court advantage and a rest edge of at least 5 days going into the finals are 8-1 all time. So again, huge rest advantage with home court advantage, 8-1. The only series loss, you'll like this, TK, coming by the 98 Utah Jazz against the Scottie Pippen Last Dance Bulls. There you go, Scotty. Throw you a bone. So, I mean, this is in Denver's favor here. I mean, they took care of business. They took their foot off the gas at the end of the regular season. Luckily for them, the Celtics didn't go to the finals or they wouldn't have home court advantage, but they do. And all of these reasons is why I'm also going Nuggets in six. Excited about this first game. I don't care who wins, as we've gone over. It's like Jokic or Jimmy getting a first ring. You know, cool. Denver gets their first. Did he get another? I don't care. I almost want Miami to win game one. Because then it's like, oh, yeah. Got a little hair in your mouth.
I got a little fuzz on the top of my tooth here.
I was like, yeah, right? Yeah. I want Miami to win game one just because then I think it's like, ooh,
makes it very
it's a
spicy.
Very exciting series. Yeah. But yeah, okay, we're both going Nuggets in six. Like I said, Tass taking Nuggets in five. I do believe there's going to be a lot of people picking Denver in the 4-5-6 variety, but let us know in the stream team. Let us know in the comments. Tweet at us at NoDunksInc. Do you still believe in the Miami Heat doing it once again? They beat the number one seeded Milwaukee Bucks. They beat the number two seeded Boston Celtics in the East, of course. And then can they beat the number one seeded Denver Nuggets in the West? And yeah, where does that put Jimmy in the list? Of how many people does he just leapfrog in terms of all-time greats if he got that ring as the eighth seed and beating all those great teams?
He
goes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Jokic, same thing as Trey started this whole thing off with. Finally getting one would be, it'd be massive to his legacy. And how many would it start for the Denver Nuggets? Was the other part. I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but they're locked into a pretty damn good team.
They got Bruce Brown as, like, their biggest question mark.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a huge player for him, but got to win the first one.
All right, guys, let's hear your predictions. Like I said, in the comments, Heat or Nuggets and how many games? You tell us. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Celtics offseason and Bob Myers leaving the Warriors. Don't go anywhere.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
All right, if you're joining us live on YouTube, thank you. Hit that like button. Make sure you subscribe and get your votes in the poll we have going right now. NBA Finals, what you got? You got four options. Is it Nuggets in 4 and 5 or Nuggets in 6 or 7? Or, of course, the opposite of that, Heat in 4 or 5 or Heat in 6 and 7. Early leader, no surprise, Nuggets in 4 or 5, 46% of the vote, 31%, 30% saying Nuggets in 6 or 7. I hope it's the latter.
So basically 3-1 split for people taking the Nuggets over the Heat, which I think will probably hold.
Yeah, I think that's right. I am sort of cheering for someone like Half-Life Heroes who put a little dough on the Miami Heat at the start of the playoffs to win the chip.
That's nice.
At, I believe, plus 6,500. Make some money.
Okay.
Make some money if that comes true, if they can win four more games here against Denver. So we'll see. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Boston Celtics, because we said we would save it. I got some questions for you here, TK, when it comes to their offseason. The first one, we start with Joe. Should Joe Mazzulla return as head coach for the Boston Celtics, or will he? What do you think?
I'm conflicted. I'm glad you asked, will he? I think he will. Yeah. I think the way that the season ended, the extra week, of podcast content we got from the Boston Celtics. Thank you so much for playing three more games, giving something to talk about. And for that reason alone, I think Joe Mazzulla should come back. But honestly, he got the team to play for him after going down 3-0.
Yeah.
On the flip side, they went down 3-0. So I don't know. I don't know how the results factor in, but I think the comeback probably keeps Mazzulla around. He was a rookie head coach. He was thrust into this job basically right away. He had a good first couple of months of the season. Then after that, started getting a lot of criticism, of course, from me as well. So I think the question will be, did he learn from the playoffs? Because the Celtics need to be a defensive identity team. And I think that's pretty obvious. That's how they came back against Philadelphia. That's how they came back against Miami. Mm-hmm. In all of the post-game quotes from games 6 and 7 against Philadelphia, from the comeback against Miami, it's basically the team talking about, we came back to our defensive identity. We got back to the team we were. Everybody saying, this is how we should play.
Right.
So I think that that's the key. I think if Joe Mazzulla realizes, yeah, we got to use, we'll see if Grant Williams sticks around, but Grant Williams, Robert Williams, we got to play the way we played when we went to the finals. I think that changes things because the team that the Celtics were was kind of odd. They're one of the most talented teams in the entire NBA, mm-hmm. Two first-team All-NBAers. You got the reigning defensive player of the year. You got the sixth man of the year. But they played like a team that was at a talent deficit. They tried to shoot a ton of threes and flip the math on teams, trying to become a hot three-point shooting team. That means you can lose
In
a lot of these games when you shoot 20%. So I think that was a little bit of a misread. But if Brad Stevens, if the players, and if Mazzulla are all on the same page going forward, I think year two could be okay.
I think they definitely need to add to that Celtics bench. If Mazzulla stays, they need to add some more experience in terms of an assistant coach. Probably a veteran coach, right? Who's been through the grind of postseason play. And maybe, you know, a former player, too, that you throw on your bench. Like we see Caron Butler with the Heat. You see it across a lot of great teams that can show a little tough love to this squad. I think that would be big. I think he will stay, Joe Mazzulla. But, there is no doubt, you said it, the Celtics' defense regressed. He was a bit of a mess when it came to calling timeouts or not calling timeouts and all that. He was slow to adapt in some of these series. It maybe bit him in the ass against the Miami Heat. Possibly they go on to win that if he's not so slow to change things. His rotations were a little weird. Now, some of that we start learning about Robert Williams in Game 7. You know, he was quite sick and all that. But KOC, Kevin O'Connor, this is what he said. I thought it was an interesting look at it. Quote, Mazzulla might have the potential to be a great head coach one day, but just as veteran teams can't wait for inexperienced players to figure it out, the Celtics shouldn't wait on an inexperienced head coach to do the same. End quote. KOC had a bit of a hit piece on the Celtics, you know, saying, get out of here, Joe. Get out of here, Jalen. You know, it's KOC leaning into pushing the big red button to blow it all up. But that is a fair point. But I think helping Joe Mazzulla, adding to that bench and going from there, I think could work. But yeah, I mean, look, I didn't see Joe Mazzulla this year and go, man, that's a great coach.
No.
No one said that.
Absolutely not.
You saw a very inexperienced head coach. I also don't love any of his post-game press conferences. I find him just to be a little weird, if I'm being honest. That maybe that's just his personality, and again, he's learning the dynamics of the, you know, talking to the media. Not that that's really important, but sometimes, you know, things he would say wouldn't instill a lot of confidence
in me, and I'm not even
a Celtics fan. So, yeah, we'll see. I think he's going to be there, though. Do you want really your fourth coach in four seasons?
That's another big question.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you find the hair that was
there? There was a hair hanging out here. I think it was one of Tass's. It looked beautiful and thick.
All right, next question.
Graydon texted me over the weekend, and he pitched me a podcast. What if we watched The Town 4 times a week for a month and did a podcast at the end of every week?
Holy.
The Joe Mazzulla plan.
Wow.
Town talk, we'll call it.
I don't mind it.
I think I would go insane, man.
Oh, you would go insane. That's funny.
How can you watch the same movie 4 times in 1 week? Any movie.
I don't know.
That's tough.
Well, that's like a perfect example. What's he talking about? What do you mean? He's not doing that. Unless, like, he's doing, like, he's prepping for his opponent and he just puts it on.
Background.
It's just background and it's
music.
Just on a loop.
Yeah, sure, okay.
I could maybe believe it then, but he's not sitting there watching it. And, like, the movie's fine, but it's not that good.
No movie's good enough to watch 4 times a week.
Well, Rad's pretty good. We could watch that.
Rad's probably shorter.
Send me an angel. Like, yeah, it is.
What is this guy getting 2 hours a day, every other day? to watch a movie.
Good point. Good point. All right, I like that idea, though, Graydon. Something there for some summer content here at No Dunks. All right, the next question. I could have led with it, if I'm being honest. Does Jaylen Brown get the Supermax? And, you know, the secondary question to that is, do the Celtics stick with the Jays? Or do you, what KOC says, yes, split them up? Do you still run this back with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown? And a part of that equation is obviously Supermax for him, $295 million. Oof.
It's going to be expensive. These Celtics are getting quite expensive, especially with this new CBA hitting.
Yeah.
It sounds scary. Every time somebody starts talking about this new CBA and the second apron, man, you better stay out of the kitchen.
Right.
That second apron comes
a nice
calling.
Pickleball reference there. And just to make that clear for anyone that doesn't know, yeah, this new CBA, it's in all likelihood going to make roster construction very difficult.
Yes.
And the Celtics could experience this firsthand as they try and figure out how to build around, if they run it back here, which I think they will, a Tatum and Brown core, because those two contracts would make up 70%.
That's their team.
Of their cap, and then force them to make all these difficult decisions of how to spend available money without exceeding that second apron. Because once you get over that, you're losing your ability to use the mid-level exception. You're complicating the path for any one-on-one trade or one-for-one trade. It has to be for a player of lesser salary. Like, it's just like, it's a lot more difficult. So, yes.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough. But I still think, yeah. I still think Jaylen Brown gets the Supermax, even after having a game where he had 8 field goals made and 8 turnovers in a game 7. Because the question for me, how would the Celtics possibly get better if Jaylen Brown leaves?
Right.
They would have to take a step back for at least the next season. Some of the trades you see bandied about, Portland is a pretty interesting one, but it's like, if they get Anfernee Simons and draft picks back, they are not better. They're not even close to as good.
What about Damian Lillard?
That's interesting.
If Dame said, I want out of Portland.
Exactly. Yeah. It really accelerates the timetable. It shortens your window, I think, because, I mean, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they're still super young, and they basically guarantee you a conference finals appearance at this point. They go every single year. They made the finals once. They were a game away from making the finals this year. You just want to throw that away because it looks bad every single playoffs? For parts of it? I don't know. Yeah. So to me, I think it's going to be pretty touchy negotiation-wise because apparently Jaylen Brown did not like being in the Kevin Durant trade talks last year, so you better come correct if you're going to go for it. Don't lowball him because I think he's going to want his entire contract, which he should. So I do think the Celtics should bring him back because it's better to have two good players that you know are good that work together. They maybe have not been the top two guys in the NBA. They haven't been the top duo, but they've been one of the best duos, they can still get better. And that is the key to me. Tatum has to be a better playmaker. Brown has to learn how to dribble. And then the Celtics take yet another step forward.
Right, right. And they're still young enough that they should be able to add that to their game. They have been, and I'm not the first to point this out, Tatum and Brown, they have been like victims of their own success, no doubt. Like early success. Brown has made the conference finals in 5 of his first 7 seasons as a pro. Tatum, 4 of his first 6, because he comes in a year later. Like, that's incredible. Like, that means you were, like, in the running in almost every year you've had these guys together for a chance to win a title. They haven't. They've come up short. But, man, I'd rather be in that scenario than, you know, a middle-of-the-pack team, a team fighting to get in. You know, maybe you win a playoff series or two. I mean, they're there. They're knocking on the door. They're both really good. The Dame one is interesting if that was a real possibility. It sounded like you would consider that one if it was upgrading Jaylen Brown with Damian Lillard for the chance to win a title right now. What about Bradley Beal? If there was anything there where it's a Jaylen Brown going out and a Bradley Beal. You got the two St. Louis Blues.
I don't think that's an upgrade.
No,
yeah.
No, okay.
Side move at best.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So you think in the end it sounds like they're going to offer him basically the Supermax, and he's going to be there, and then you obviously build around around these two guys, which is going to get difficult. Now, Brown's big money extension wouldn't kick in until next summer, and then Tatum the summer after that. So there's a tiny little bit of a
little window.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what you think is going to happen here?
Yeah, it just doesn't. It was a bummer ending, no doubt, for the Celtics, the way the season ended, especially considering the comeback against Philadelphia. You're thinking, we got Miami. We beat them last year. Obviously, it's a rivalry between the teams, but to get down 3-0, that was a bummer. And then to come all the way back and then losing Game 7 the way they lost. Definitely a bummer and puts a little bit of a tarnish on Jaylen Brown. Makes you look a little bit sideways at bringing him back for one of the biggest contracts in the NBA. But still, like, if you're one of the 4 teams left standing every single season, that means you got a chance to win. And you just need luck to go the right way for you. at one point.
You've been one of the...
They were up 2-1 in the finals last year.
You've been one of the final four teams standing almost every year, it feels like, with a new coach every year.
That's right.
And these two guys are the constants. Yeah. So I'm with you. I'm a big Jaylen Brown fan. Obviously, yeah, the handle, it's got to get better. I've made this comparison a million times, but I remember when DeRozan had no handle. It feels very similar. There's actually some comparisons to a little bit Tatum Brown to the old Lowry DeRozan days. Now, these two on the Celtics, they're a level up.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, than the DeRozan Lowry days. But we saw what happened time and time again with them. You know, some regular season success, obviously faltering in the playoffs. Some of that was running into LeBron James, which the Celtics don't really have that excuse for anymore, him being in a different conference. But the Raptors eventually did say, we're moving one of these guys, because they saw the perfect scenario where it was like, we're actually upgrading the player, getting Kawhi Leonard, who sort of damaged goods in his situation in San Antonio. Could that happen here in Boston? If it was like a Damian Lillard or something, like if it's a player that's an upgrade to help your window to win a championship right now or next season or the season after, then I think you do it. But there are like, I mean, I can think of Damian Lillard. You don't even think Beal would fall into that category. It's like, then who? There's not many other names.
I'll be honest with you. I don't even know if Damian Lillard is in that category.
Sure.
Like, Kawhi was a finals MVP by the time he got to the Raptors. Kawhi was one of the five best players in the league by the time he got to the Raptors.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that guy is right now. Maybe if the Lakers decide to move on from Anthony Davis, fits the bill.
Okay. Final question here with the Celtics. I mean, what other moves need to be made in addition to figuring out Jaylen Brown? Where do you think they could, you know, shore up this team, or what are something they need to focus on?
The whole rotation is a bit of a question mark to me, because Grant Williams is going to be into restricted free agency. He was awesome for them in the playoffs. I thought, like, he came back into being a key player for the Celtics, mm-hmm. being able to help their small ball lineups and guard up, guard down. But he didn't play very much during the
regular season. Took Mazzulla too long. Yeah.
Exactly. He was more of an Ime Udoka favorite than a Joe Mazzulla favorite, because Mazzulla over-indexes on offense. Al Horford is getting older. He had a really great regular season, second in the league in three-point shooting. There were still times I thought that he had big-time impact mm-hmm. in the playoffs, but you just never know as players get that old. And then Robert Williams, he's awesome for 20 minutes a game, 50 times a season. I don't think he's a super reliable guy.
No.
So that's question marks for all three of their big spots. I just don't know. I'm like, somebody could make an offer to Grant Williams that's too much for the Celtics to bring him back, because he's, as a guy who's in the players union, it's kind of part of his job to go for as big of a contract as he can. So I think he should.
What do you think he could warrant from another team? Like, is he going to be 20 million? Under 18, 17, 18?
That seems a lot. 20 mil, 17 or 18?
Yeah.
15 to 18.
Okay, 15.
Something like that. But I would like having him on my team. Like, I just think he's a solid player. He maybe gets in trouble with his mouth a little bit, as he did with Donovan Mitchell and Jimmy Butler this season. But you would still rather have him back, especially since he's been around for quite a bit. He's just a good continuity guy as well. It just seems like the roster is a little weirdly balanced to me. They've got three point guards in Derek White, Marcus Smart, and Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, I think
they're
one of those. Good. I think one of those guys is going to go.
Yeah,
I do.
And I see people are saying that it should be Smart. Maybe it should be. I mean, I don't know. A playmaker would definitely help the Celtics. I think Smart is a good playmaker. He's just a little too risky, a little too high variance to be the guy. So, I don't know. One of those three could move on, I imagine, just because you don't need three of similar players.
You wouldn't think it'll be Derek White, the way he played.
Yep.
I think that would be silly. Brogdon, I mean, injuries came into play. That's sort of always been his thing. He's set to make $22.5 million next season. He's got 2 years remaining on his deal. Smart makes $18.6 million next year. I could see why people think it would be Marcus Smart being the one that would be potentially moved. But that's a little weird, because he feels like the identity of the Boston Celtics half the time. But maybe that's the shakeup you'd have to do. I feel like one of those guys, though, probably Brogdon or Smart, is not there next season. And I think I think that's right, because they're sort of, they do different things, some better than others, but there is some similarities, like, between the three of them. Like,
yeah.
You start running out of minutes for them, so we'll see if that's what they do. But let's hear from you guys when it comes to the Boston Celtics and what they do in the offseason, especially the Jaylen Brown Supermax, or the idea of, like, do you have a trade that actually makes sense where you're moving Jaylen Brown, if that's your decision. In other news, Golden State's Bob Myers, two-time Executive of the Year, architect for four NBA championships with the Warriors. He's stepping down as the franchise's president and GM. As The Athletic previously reported, The Athletic was all over this story like a month ago saying, this is probably going to happen. Bob Myers is probably leaving. The Warriors and Myers had no substantial contract extension talks in the months leading up to Tuesday's decision, where Bob Myers and the ownership there had a press conference. So the franchise was prepared for his departure. What do you think this means for Golden State here moving forward? There's talks of maybe Mike Dunleavy Jr. taking over, but they have obviously questions with Draymond Green and then contracts coming up with Clay and all that. And what do you, you know, Jordan Poole, is he going to be staying there? Are you moving off him? What do you think this all means?
Whoever takes over is going to have a lot to do this summer, no doubt about it. The Poole extension was done last year, but now it's a question mark if he sticks around. The Draymond is a huge piece of it. The Clay is a huge piece of it. But we know one guy from the dynasty is leaving, and that's Bob Myers. And that's, I don't know, it just makes the team feel a little unsettled to me because a lot of the, I don't remember at least a lot of dynasties where the head decision makers were changing halfway through.
That's a good point.
Right? Like R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich, those were the guys for the Spurs the entire time. Jerry Krause was the guy for the Bulls the entire time. Yep. Bill Belichick was the guy for the Patriots the entire time. You don't see the people who are making the calls change up top and teams continue on winning. So I think that definitely unsettled, but I think that the Warriors are going to come back together because there's a lot of reporting from Tim Kawakami, from Anthony Slater in these pieces basically saying, we're all still on board here. We want Draymond back. We want to figure out what that's going to be. Maybe Clay takes a little bit of a pay cut, but as long as Steph's around, they got a chance. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. If Steph's there,
yeah,
Golden State is still around, still a force to be reckoned with, but this does feel like the beginning of the end of an era, which is almost the Fast X tagline. Not quite, but it feels like the beginning of the end of an era when one of the first core pieces moves on to whatever the next thing is.
Well, it's no secret that Myers was particularly close with Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So there is that part. Now, Steve Kerr has 1 year left on his contract. All indications remain that he plans to stick around and see that through its end, but he was very close with Bob Myers. Like, Bob Myers, like, there was, you know, there's some pretty explosive personalities, not just on the Warriors team, but I would say in the Warriors, like, ownership level.
Oh, yeah.
And it feels like Bob Myers was always the one to sort of calm everyone down, get on the same page, put out some fires, keep this dynasty running. And now that he is gone, that's a, you know, those are big shoes to fill, be it Mike Dunleavy Jr. or Kirk Lacob or whoever steps into that role. And then there's the Draymond Green. Yeah, he's got player option. Does he want to go elsewhere? Does he want to stay? Clay has extension talks coming up, and you would have thought Bob Myers would play a huge role in that as a trusted negotiator. So, yeah, this is big. Like, usually, like, I think some people are like, who cares? It's a guy in a suit. But, like, these, this is why all these deals get made. They come together. You keep coaches happy. You keep front off or the ownership happy. Like, it's someone like Bob Myers who's so trusted and liked, not only there but across this league. It's big. Like, I don't think this should,
I agree,
you know,
I
like, agree, just be, like, glossed over. It's like, oh, it's all right. They'll be fine. I don't know. Because you see this happen in, like, you know, companies where someone in control of a lot of people decides to leave for whatever reason or gets pushed out. Not that that happened in this case, but leaves. People start going, okay, all right, are we okay? Like, I really like that guy or woman. Like, then somebody comes in and maybe there's butting of heads. There's a change of plans, directions. It's like, I don't want to be here either. I miss that guy. I miss my Bob. So we'll see if it happens.
Totally, man. I knew this family. The dad ran a huge conglomerate, died on an airplane trying to fly across the seas. And it plunged his family and his company into complete chaos.
Did it?
Yeah. Wild stuff, so you never know what's going to happen these Warriors.
Jesus. Yeah. Lord, live every moment.
Yeah.
All right, let's...
One thing I did notice, though, a lot of talk about Mike Dunleavy Jr. being the takeover guy. So my first question, of course, is he going to be the tallest GM in the league?
Well, how tall was Bob Myers?
I think Bob Myers was listed at 6'7".
Oh, okay.
Mike Dunleavy listed at 6'9".
Oh, wow.
There are two taller GMs out there.
Calvin Booth?
Number one, 6'11".
Pull that was. That's sicko shit right
that
there.
That was honestly impressive.
I don't know if I can get the other one.
The other one, no surprise, a former player.
Yeah. Alonzo Mourning? No, it doesn't count.
No, I don't think he's technically their GM. That's a good one. He's, I bet, same height as Alonzo Mourning.
Oh, man.
Eastern Conference GM.
Eastern Conference GM.
Made a big trade during the season.
During the season.
This year.
The
biggest trade.
The Kevin Durant trade.
The Kevin Durant trade.
Oh, Sean Marks.
Sean Marks, 6'10".
Sneaky tall guy.
Sneaky tall guy, yeah.
Damn. Man, I can't believe I got Booth over
that
Marks.
That was impressive, man. I had to Google list of NBA GMs and then individually check all of the former players' heights. No offense to Tim Connelly. I didn't check Tim Connelly's height.
Who's the shortest?
Well, I don't know.
All right, let me
speculate.
No, you don't got to do that.
Kobe Altman.
Okay, there you go.
Is he? I don't know.
Spring has sprung, and spring is the best time of year to take a look at your fitness routine, dial it up a notch, and continue powering on. Reminds me of that scene in Rocky III when Apollo Creed is training Rocky to face Clubber Lang. Remember that? What does Apollo do? He puts Rocky in the pool. He makes him run on the beach. He makes him dance. Why? To strengthen muscles he never even knew he had. That's me on my Peloton. I'm not just riding it anymore. Sure, I'll jump on a 30-minute ride with the Cadence King, Dennis Morton. But now I'm lifting weights. I'm working on my core. And sometimes I'm doing all of the above in a boot camp. Point is, you can personalize your workout. Whether you add a 10-minute core session at the end of your metrics-focused class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. And there's a variety of classes like boxing, boot camps, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. And hey, is this new? Work out while you watch with NBA League Pass on Peloton. That's pretty cool. Watch your favorite games and win your workouts with NBA League Pass on Peloton and visit onepeloton.com. Peloton All Access membership and NBA League Pass subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night. Pretty, pretty easy one. It was going all over Twitter last night, and as I saw this morning, 33,000 likes. It's from Josh Hart, who asks, have y'all ever tasted y'all significant other's breast milk? Asking for a friend. He's asking for himself, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. What's going on here?
I think he's got a young babe.
Right.
But a month old.
That just happened, yeah, during the postseason.
Yep.
So he tried it.
He tried it,
or he's thinking
about
it.
Or maybe he was asked to try it.
Right. So did you try?
Of course.
Right.
I've been curious of what breast milk tastes like since a Friends episode in 1995. They did a whole episode about this 30 years ago.
I thought you were going to say since Robin from Game of Thrones. But nice, even honestly, deeper pull there.
I was honestly curious the second I was born. I was like, what does that taste like?
Well,
Then I stepped away for 30-something years.
Right.
And then I came roaring back.
And?
Tastes like milk, Skeets.
Oh, okay.
Very similar to milk.
Turns out it's called that for a reason.
I don't think it's gross to drink your significant other's breast milk.
What were the reactions to this? I mean, I didn't do a...
You're crazy, Josh.
Oh, okay. I thought Jalen Brunson, I think...
Did he say... I saw...
Like, having some fun at his
expense.
I saw
that De'Aaron Fox said, of course you're asking this 1 month in. Something like that.
We're on to you.
Spike Gessian said, is your friend a baby?
I did see that. I laughed at that.
That's
I laughed
good.
At that. JD, what about you? Did you ever... try Rachel's breast milk. Hey, Rachel, come on in here. Bring a couple cups while you're at it.
Oh, man, if she was lactating now, that would be bad news. Hell no. Absolutely not.
No.
No.
Oh,
I'm not a bodily fluids person. I think I've mentioned before, if I cut my finger, I'm not even putting that in my mouth. Like,
oh, really?
That's
the first thing I do.
I know. That's the first thing most people do.
Yeah.
But, No, I have zero curiosity. In fact, I'm mildly grossed out about it. So,
how do you feel about milk in general from the cow?
Milk, I'm fine with, I guess. I mean, I enjoy a latte, you know, but I'm not whipping up a latte with my wife's breast milk. Fair. It seems like a waste, to be honest. Like, it was kind of hard to get that milk going.
Right. Save it for the baby.
Yeah, exactly.
He felt selfish.
Well, Lincoln was early, so we had to sort of like help that along, like getting the milk out. And breastfeeding is no joke. It's not an easy thing. And then Jackson was a goddamn glutton when it came to the milk. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Guzzler.
Just a guzzler. Mm. So even if I wanted to try it, I probably...
There was
nothing left. Okay. How? I mean, are you getting it straight from the teat, I guess is the question, or... Are you putting it in a bottle, like checking the temperature and then taking a swig out of a bottle? I mean,
I licked my arm.
Okay.
Chandler Bing style.
All right.
No wonder you got all that hair in your mouth. Licking your arm.
All right. Just really as much hair from the teat in some cases. True, so you never know.
What a tweet. Yeah. What?
Teat of the night.
Yeah. I was just about to say it. What a tweet. What a teat. Josh Hart, good stuff. All right. That's it for us here today, guys. But there is a new No Bunts pod up on the Athletic Baseball Show feed. Before Tass took off to Denver, him and Joel jumped on to discuss Pete Alonso crushing dingers. Guess he's on his way to 60 home runs. An umpire caught on a hot mic, and Mike Trout's fascinating and, you know, complex career and how people feel about Mike Trout as a baseball player. So the guys talked about that and a whole lot more. That link is in the show notes. So go check out No Bunts. We'll be back tomorrow for... some fun, some craziness, I'm sure. Maybe we'll hit the beach. Get your questions in.
Yeah, get your questions in. Tweet otherwise, us. We just got to preview the finals again.
We'll just do it back. We'll just run this back.
Got any other X Factors?
Zeke
Nagy. Just watch The Town four times.
We could watch The Town and talk about it. At No Dunks Inc., INC on the end, if you want to tweet in some questions. Yeah, we'll probably hit the beach and yeah, maybe have some fun. We could take a look at the odds in the finals.
First
maybe
basket.
Play some bets. Yeah, first basket. Yeah. Right. You know, finals MVP and stuff like that and how many games. Anyway, we'll do something more when it comes to the NBA Finals. And then tomorrow night, we probably will be doing a watch party for game one of the NBA Finals on Playback. We'll share that link once that's up. I'll do that later today. But thanks for joining us here live. Hit that like button, subscribe. If you're a podcast listener, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. Until tomorrow, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, L&L Limos is a scam.
You watch the whole thing? Oh, yeah. Let's just talk about it. I think you should leave season 3 tomorrow. That's
I'll
what we'll
watch
do.
It 4 times tonight.
So will I. Brace the day, people.